This is January 24th, and the next meeting will be February 28th, 1993, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Good morning, my friends. I think today, just to begin to touch upon a subject that I think will be coming up again and again as we come to a close in our time together. Many of you are going to begin to be pushed from the inside, deeply from the inside, to begin to dedicate yourself to paths that may look and feel a little bit differently from what you have been doing in the past, meaning this. And we would like to encourage you in all ways to pay attention to those movements of the awareness, to begin full, complete, and total investigation of what seems to you to be a new path. Now, first of all, understand that no path is new. If it's new, it's not worth following, because there's only one awareness. And so, since there is no past, present, future, as human consciousness understands it, just please be alive to what we will call this mysterious matrix of something that is going to and has been and will continue to prompt you from within. Now, I've been asked various times, what kinds of things should you be looking for? My friends, those of you who have been with this work all these years now, how many are we on? 14, some long time. Now, if you have done nothing else, you have become connoisseurs of what works for you and what does not. You will have become aware of one very interesting thing. And if this interesting thing is present in whatever you choose, then I think you have chosen beautifully, deeply, and magnificently. And what is that? It is when you enter the teaching, when you begin to read the text, when you examine the audiovisual material, whatever it might be, please pay close attention not to what your mind says, because the mind can be tricked. For example, there was a wonderful recording of a beautiful poem, absolutely magnificent poem, and was read in its great depths, and then when the question and answer period came around, someone in the audience said, well, it was a woman, she said, well, I object to the word Lord. And the woman speaking to her said, do you mean to tell me that you didn't hear the poem because you were worried about this word Lord? And she said, well, I couldn't get past the word Lord. Unfortunately, it was in the early part of this poem. The answer given then is what we would give now, which is very simply, you are going to run into words that differentiate, and if you get caught up in the words and not the spirit of the motion, of the movement, then you're going to lose. Many of you know who have been working with us these many years, there are some words that I use that you don't approve of either. But out of the kindness and love in your heart, you throw those things out and you allow yourself to vibrate and feel the life in what remains that is appropriate for you. So as we talk about these things, as you go through them, all that we ask is that part of your awareness be very alert to the feelings that you receive in your physical body. I don't mean the ideas that go through your mind. I mean what actually happens in the physical arena of your own personal awareness. And when you begin to get excited, when you begin to have, you see, you set yourselves in beautiful positions for wonderful deepening experiences. And we have never claimed that this was the only way. And as you know, it is not the only way. Why should it be the only way? You know, never squash, always cabbage. I mean, what if you don't like either squash or cabbage? Then what? So the excitement by, as our work fades into something else, the excitement will be that all of you move into things that you will bring all that you have gleaned, not only from this, but your whole lives, into something new, exciting, and deepening, and magnificent. another way of talking about it. There are going to be a lot of so-called new paths created, which many of which come from ancient paths such as the Vedas and the deep records of consciousness. Now, at the same time, all is well with that as long as you put aside the mind and allow your own awareness to be the decision maker. As you begin to get excited by something, would you please take that as the call from the inner awareness that says, let's do this. Let's do this. And someone said to me not long ago, I feel like if I move into something else, I will somehow be betraying this path. I would like to clarify that. There's no such thing as a betrayal. When you take what you have learned and move it into an ever-deepening experience that will not only benefit you, but many others as well. You move from whatever teachings that you have taken in and made your own, and you walk into the world as givers of your own experience, blending with the experience of others. And our anticipation is that in the next 5 years, you are going to find many interesting openings for those of you who are looking. And as you begin to get excited by that, please understand that anything that you have taken from this carries the total love and excitement for whatever it is that you will do yet again. This has never been an exclusive path. It could not be. God has no favorites. And it may surprise you, but God doesn't favor one path over another. There are just different human beings with different ways of awakening to the fact that you are already fully and completely awake in the heart of consciousness. So, having said that, I'd like to talk about what joins all of these paths. Because, for example, in one path, they're going to say, no, don't concentrate. You know, Buddhism says, just concentrate on the breath, concentrate on the hara. All right? There'll be another path that says, no, that's inferior. You should concentrate on the third eye. There'll be another path that says, no, that will excite the occult. Concentrate on the heart. There'll be another that says, no, that's all below the neck. You have to concentrate on the top chakra. Well, my friends, if you are going to listen to all of this, what are you going to do? Well, how about 5 minutes of each? You know, just make sure you cover your bets here. Now, and then other people will say, that isn't it. Mantram is the way. Those deep upswellings of empowered mantrams, that's the way. Others will say, no, prayer, look at Mother Teresa, the magnificent example of someone 4 hours a day on her knees. That is what you all, well, aren't you glad that's not the only way? 4 hours a day on your knees would be quite difficult for someone trained as you have been trained in the life of the mind. All right, now, so then what is the way? What is the way to the truth of all of this beautiful light? The truth is that as often as you can, my friends, you would please bring your good humor to this and realize that someone who has gone to the trouble to create a path is pretty well dedicated to that path because that path has brought them the light. So out of that excitement comes, this is the way to the truth and the light. Now, on one level, every one of the teachers that says this is laughing. We've talked about this before. On the deepest level, the truly awakened are laughing when they talk about their special path. Because the ones who are really awakened to God light, who really have seen it, experienced it, tasted it, touched it, and been transformed by it, know there's only one light, and that there aren't any words to say, oh no, this chakra, because on that level, they don't care whether you're in a body, out of a body. There is no differentiation. There is only this magnificent, mysterious matrix, this wonderful substance, this something. And it is that which we ask you today to remember, and in the years to come, forever, to remember the excitement of what unifies. It is very simple to talk about what separates. And in the talking about the separations, we could be endlessly stuck in the morass of who's right and who's wrong, whose guru is the better guru, who's enlightened, who's not. You know, They ask His Holiness the Dalai Lama if he's enlightened, and he laughs. He laughs. That is the response. Hopefully, all of you, as you begin to get enlightened yourselves, which I hope is the point of all of this, isn't it? That you will awaken to the own light that is constantly throbbing through all parts of your awareness and your physical body as well. When you awaken to that light, I hope you will laugh as well. When someone says, "Oh, my dear, are you enlightened?" I hope you roar. I hope you clutch yourself with laughter. I hope you find it very funny. Because if you don't, then you are not enlightened. And let's go back and start again. Because be careful about the wonder of the excitement. Now, when someone states, "Do this and do that," they state it in this way because there is the necessity on one level to convince that part of you that is weighing things. And they also know something, and this is absolutely true. You will find, in whatever path you choose to proceed on, that when what we asked you to do was throw yourself in wholeheartedly. It is that wholehearted throwing yourself into it which brings about the continuous vibrational attunement, and it is the vibrational attunement which brings the enlightenment awareness. All right? So, whatever it is, please make up your mind and hold your nose and jump in. Does it mean you know this is going to work? You don't know anything. And if someone says to you, "I know my path will work for you," think about it. Because no one can know ahead of time anything other than you come with your expectation, you come with your desire, and as you know from the beginnings that we've ever spoken, what makes you move into desire and full enlightenment is the desire and the anticipation of it. So, one major rule in whatever you pick, if it excites you, if it delights you, if you wake up in the morning, even though you don't want to sit for a half an hour, even though you'd rather, I don't know, whatever, but you find yourself there, if you find something within you pushing you into that particular direction, it's this matrix that's at work, this mysterious matrix that connects all of the different paths, that connects all of the light, and is constantly available. And it is not something that your mind will understand. It is something that you will respond to from a cellular excitement. That means that if you spend too much time trying to think it, you're going to miss it. And so as you begin to allow yourself to relax into what feels good and allow yourself to do the thing that brings you joy and expectation, then you'll be closer and closer. I know, my friends, you have been taught that suffering brings God. Well, so does bliss. There's no doubting that suffering is a legitimate path to God. I would not deny that. I would never deny that. Because in the suffering, whether it be physical, emotional, or mental, comes the conviction that in spite of the difficulty, there must be something else here that is absolutely trustworthy. There must be something else unnameable, unknowable with the mind that can be, that is resilient, that allows you day after day to come back into your life and to live it with the fullness, as much fullness as you possibly can. All of you have had one measure or another of pain and sorrow and loss and suffering. It is a courageous thing to be a human being, and I ask you not to deny its grandeur. I ask you not to relegate it to the area of kindergarten. I've heard this a lot, that the planet is a kindergarten planet. Do you feel like a kindergartner? When you have the courage each morning to face whatever it is that some mysterious power of awareness has placed you into this new day, do you really consider yourself to be a little one, blind and stumbling? I doubt it. I think when you find yourself facing those great difficulties that do come, you find yourself to be a courageous and strong and enduring consciousness that continues to move in circumstances far beyond your desire to participate in, and yet you find a willingness to live through it, a willingness to live it with as much grace, with as much humor, with as much love and compassion as you possibly can. I do not consider that the actions of a kindergartner. So I ask you to put on the integrity of who you are and to realize that one of the most difficult things in this world that you are asked to do is to love. Now, I know that everyone can be an English teacher in the United States because everyone in the United States speaks English. So, of course, you can all be teachers of the language, all right? You know this to not be true. At the same time, you have the same idea that all of you, anyone can love because you have all experienced certain levels of love. Well, we're talking here today about something a little different because what we're asking for you to understand and to be mature and gracious in your knowing of it is that the thing that you've been asked the most to do, the most difficult thing to do, is to be able to approach your life with a mature love, not only for yourself in that you have the strength and the courage every day to face that day, but also from knowing that in the commitment to loving, and I don't mean just intimate love, I'm talking about love in its totality here, loving as many moments of the day as you can. In that commitment, that is the measure of the mature psyche, and it is that measure that awakens you to the light. With that, do you understand? When you say, oh, it's easy to love, are you paying attention? Are you paying attention? It is not easy to love. Oh, it's easy to love now and forget tomorrow. That's not hard. But the question is that love or is that something quite different? Quite different. The ability to love on a sustained basis means that you are willing to take the pain that you know comes with loss, to hold in your hands the imbalance between wanting to run away and wanting to stay. Now, none of you know about that, do you? Wanting to get the child out of your life because you're so confused you don't know what to do, and wanting to love them forever. You don't know about that either. All of the dualities that come from that deepest, most mature thrust of the human psyche, which is to love openly, fully committed. You know, the difficulty, I think, often in what I would call romanticized love is it goes kind of like this. Well, dear, if you're good to me, then I'll stay. If you're not good to me, I'll leave. Well, on one level, I agree with that. If someone is being very abusive, by all means, leave. But on the deepest level, when you begin to look at what this funny thing called love is, you begin to realize that it demands one of the most difficult things of psyches. And what is that? A sustained patience. I can just hear you. A sustained patience. Now, what do we mean? Patience as a quality is greatly overlooked because it's difficult to sustain. When we talk today about love, we cannot couple it with any other word as strongly as we do the word of patience. Meaning, not patience for a few moments, but the willingness to be patient for months and sometimes years, in order to allow both people or groups of people or families or nations or planets to be able to hold your commitment to loving in a long-term, patient way. Now, we have to move now into the planet. And as you know, we asked you to give as much prayer for this planet, as much love pouring out as you possibly could in this last four-week period. And for those of you that were committed to that, our very deep gratitude. I told you last month, it matters. This month has been an interesting global month. Various things have happened one way or another. But what we want to touch on today is what about your end of all of this world activity? Where do you stand? What is your responsibility? Now, my friends, this is where patience comes in. And it's where you will begin to understand if you're following your own response to events. You will find out how little of it you have. And I don't mean to be rude, but my friends, very few people have a lot of patience until they decide to develop that quality of consciousness. Now, patience means the ability to see something on your universal mandala of the television to be able to see something happening, let us say, in Iraq, and to be aware of your response deeply, not to deny it, to be aware of your response. What is it? Let's go bomb the place. Let's get him. Let's whatever it might be. Be aware of that. And at the same time, please, without trying to get, I don't want to get political here. That is the last thing that I wish to get. But at the same time, this planet is in peril. This planet is in jeopardy. If you haven't noticed, then you haven't been watching the television. Not just this little excursions here and there. I'm talking about as a planetary motion, things are afoot. The weather has begun to speak in a way that it has not spoken before. The tidal changes. All of these things are beginning to change. Something is afoot. Now, we do not go into the next mode and say, oh, something's afoot. It's going to be terrible. We're going to lose everything. Doom and gloom and destruction. I refuse to play that. At the same time, you do not pretend that great energies are not moving across the face of this planet. And the question that has to be asked is, what about you? You know, you can sit there and speculate what it means, but that's all of your mind work. You can read all of the psychic predictions, and if you have read them, aren't you confused? You must have become confused by the psychic predictions because they are very different. And if you listen to them all, it's like the many chakras in the body. You're going to go crazy. You know, your mind is not going to be able to work with this. But there is some part of you, this matrix of consciousness, this matrix of awareness, which is what makes you aware of being a human being, that is going to absolutely be of use to you. Now, world awareness. You feel your response. If you have good humor, you can laugh at your response. Oh, I didn't know I would just like to go over and murder him. That's interesting. I didn't know that was a part of my awareness. Would you face it and not say, oh, I would never think of such a thing. Oh, whatever. The understanding is you begin by the honesty. All one level of world events is a personal teacher. Let me say again. On one level, world events is a personal teacher, meaning you learn from world events. Many of you have structured your life so that you're pretty safe. You know, you let people in your door that you want in, and you keep people out that you don't want in. You answer your telephone when you please, and you turn it off when you don't, and the little machine does it all for you. Now, that's fine. I do not recommend you throw away your answering machines. In fact, it might be nice to get one. But because inconvenience is inconvenient, it is possible to construct lives so that you do not learn from your surroundings, and so the world events stand you in good stead if you will only open to them. Now, as you begin to feel the tremendous sorrow over the children and all of the events and the women in Bosnia-Herzegovina, all of these things, as you begin to feel that pain, pay attention, recognize this is the thrust of the deepest part of your human awareness crying out for equality on the human plane. That all people be treated with the integrity that is your birthright. Please feel this, experience this. Don't run away from it. Don't begin to sob and cry and get out of the feeling. Stay with the feeling. Acknowledge what it is. At the same time, when the murderous one comes up, well, our problems will be solved if he wasn't here. Pay attention to that. Don't run away. Don't excuse. Don't up-level. Stay with it, because that is part of the totality of the human condition. And as you learn from the human world that is outside yourself, which is the world's excitement, the world happening, the world's evolution, you are going to participate in deeper and deeper levels of your own life. Now, those of you who do not choose to watch television, then don't. This is not a directive. This is simply a statement that as you begin to use your world to mirror parts of your inner life that you have closed yourself off to because some of them you do not like the look of, you will begin to be more human, which means you will be more full of integrity and compassion. And you will be able to love yourself more, and as a result, be able to love everyone else to a much fuller degree. The reason many of you cannot love yourself is that you have not allowed yourself to look at yourself fully. You only look at yourself in fragments. For example, oh, I did that wrong. Oh, I didn't do that right. Oh, you know, the forgetful one, the one who can't remember, the one who can't love, the one who doesn't know how to do it, the one that can't make enough money, the one that never, all of those wonderful things that you say to yourself again and again and again. And when you only look at one side of yourself, you do not give yourself that wonderful excitement of feeling the other side of yourself. The side that is tolerant, the side that is loving in the face of difficulty, that is patient on occasion, that is whatever it is. You see, you are very selective in the amount of yourself that you allow yourself to experience. Therefore, what arises is, I'm a dishonest person. I'm a dishonest person. Do you know there's not a person in this room that isn't a dishonest person? And if you are not aware of that, if you are not aware of the times that you deceive in one way or another, then you're not watching. It isn't a quality of human consciousness that you have to never deceive. Do you understand? It's not possible. Every time you open your mouth under a tense situation, you're going to make choices. And sometimes you make the obvious choice, which, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I'm simply going to omit. I'm simply not going to state. The idea that you can only experience your whole God self if you are a perfectly honest person is to mean that you have a very long wait coming. And I do not think that this game was ever set up for you to have to be perfect before you can feel what we would call the light of consciousness, the light of awareness, the God light, whatever word you like, that is constantly permeating every one of the cells. When you begin to see on the scientific experiments, which they are coming into now, and begin to see the release of the magnificent light that comes from these particles of subatomic wonder, when you begin to really see them on the scientific screens, you will begin to appreciate the immensity of the light within you. And the question is, do you not get to experience this until you are in some way perfect? That is to allow your ego to run your life. And I ask you to think about it seriously, because as you go through your day, let us say that you're working with a particular problem. Let us say that you have decided to adopt the identity that you are a dishonest person, or an unloving person, let's take that one, an unloving person. Now, if that is the identity that you are made, that you use to mostly identify yourself with, what happens is that you keep finding ways to strengthen that identity every moment of your life. Because out of 25 thoughts, one of them is negative, and you say, I'm an unloving person. Ignoring the 25, the other 24, ignoring the endless times that you do serve, someone one day says, please go get me a cup of coffee, and you say, I'm too tired. Well, that ignores the other 24 times that you have done so, and all that one remembers is, I didn't care enough, I didn't love enough to get up, do and go and do and so on. Now, when you begin to understand that you create the identification of yourself as an unloving being because you are so very selective, when you understand that, then you can begin to open it up, and it, please, I hope you understand what I mean when I say, begin to play this game another way. You can begin to watch for the number of times a day that you are loving, or that you are honest, or that you are caring, or you are giving, or you are whatever it is that you're working on. When you begin to strengthen the identity of the opposite of whatever it is that is plaguing you. Now, example, and this I will lose some of you on, but we'll do it anyway. We've talked about this on two levels. One, you can do the same thing with your health. We've talked about that before. If you keep identifying yourself endlessly as an ill person, then you create an identity. If I might talk to you a moment, Beeb, one of the most marvelous things about Doris was her ability in the midst of whatever illness she was in to create around her an identity for most people of a healthy, intelligent, expansive, loving, compassionate, and helpful woman. And that is the identity that she created magnificently in the midst of whatever she was feeling. And that was a choice. And the same choice is all of yours. You can identify. This doesn't mean the illness leaves. It means, what do you identify with? Do you identify with your love, your compassion, your wisdom, your power, your excitement of life, or something else? Do you identify deeply? Now, let's go to the level that we work on the most, which is, do you identify with the level of the spiritual seeker who's stumbling through life and doesn't know anything, hoping to heaven that God notices you sometime, somewhere along this path and says, oh, sweetie, I'm ready. Or you decide to create moment by moment the identity of someone who has access to this light that you haven't made up. My friends, you didn't make up the light. People say, oh, I don't believe in the light, and I always laugh. I always laugh because the first thing that happens when they cross out of body is, here comes the light. I never worry because the first thing that happens is, here comes the light. It cannot be other. It is there. It is ever present. And whatever belief system is in place, it cannot stop the light. It inundates the awareness fully, completely, utterly. It gives it the compassion, the support, the wonder, and the beauty of consciousness. And so you can say, I don't believe in the light, and I just smile, because I know what will happen. I will know that at the moment of that transition, all of the doubts are put to rest, not by some mental imaging, not by some belief structure adjustment, but by the reality of what is. And that's why I can sit here with all of the being and say, you are the light. It exists in every single particle of your being. And you either identify with someone who can feel that, know it, be a part of that matrix, or you aren't. I realize your teaching has been away from that. Your teaching has been different than that, and so be it. And there's nothing wrong with those teachings. They give magnificent substance to many people. I'm just saying, those of you who care enough to come to a place like this on today, to remember, the light is undeniably present. And as science begins to come together with the great religious teachings of the world, which they will over the subject of light, then things are going to lighten up. You knew I couldn't resist that. It is a matter of a choice of identity. Do you identify yourself in this way? I've asked you to take this seriously because it rides your life. It rides your day. It rides your night. It rides you. You think that you ride it, but it rides you. Whatever identity that you have created. Now, I realize that many of you have had some difficulties in your early years about who helped create your identity. But I want you to know, however bad some of them are, none of them were very good. You know, some of them were really awful, and I do agree. And I have absolute and total sympathy for that. But at the same time, if you will look at your own cluster, you will realize what I'm talking about. And if there's any change that we see as a possible excitement on this planet, it comes right here. Many of the new parents, and please, my friends, do you know that the so-called new age children are a drop in the bucket compared to the number of children there are on this planet? So we are not talking about vast numbers of billions. We are talking about a relatively small nucleus of children whose parents are beginning to enlighten themselves, and in so doing are learning that there are magnificent ways to raise children that are very different from the ways that you were raised. And therein lies the hope of this planet. Because when the parents know that they are talking to an individual of light and power who needs training on a gentle and firm basis, they begin to do things very differently than the idea that this is a mess of nothing that somehow needs to be grown into and shaped into a form. And of course, both parents hope it'll be like them. But you know, the joke is, you don't really want your children to be like you, do you? Do you really? And do you want the next generation to be like your generation? Do you not hope that something magnificently rambunctious here is happening? That each generation somehow, in some way, is beginning to learn some things that you, as the generation before, are beginning to become awakened to? As you begin to enlighten your life, you will begin to know that that will trickle down. It does bleed through into the next generation. Everything that you do has a purpose. For example, this last weekend at the workshop in Taos, we were asked the question of Why bother? The question was, someone who had tried for years and years and years to find the light, to be fully alive in the light of consciousness. And on being asked what she should do, the response was, keep doing the same thing you're doing. At which point, she burst into tears and said, inside, nuts. She was kind enough not to say it outside. It was very clear. This was not the answer that this lovely lady wanted. Now, what then do we say? At the same time that we talk about you as an individual, we must, at this stage, talk about something that is vaster. We have stated that one of the ways of talking about why you are on this planet is because you have a magnificent, exciting chance to participate in one of the most wonderful experiments in all of creation. It is the ability to bring conscious light, power, and awareness into moments that are unconscious and dark and shadow-filled. This is what this planet is undertaking, and as such, this experiment, which is not doing so badly, by the way, just not doing so badly. Someone asked me, how are we doing? Not so bad. Not so bad. But one way is to understand, I've told you before, you are the outriders. You are the ones that have to go ahead of the wagon train and say, let's go through this pass. If we go up there, it's going to be a long time. Let's go this way. And as you begin to understand that you are on two levels at the same time, you will begin to see what's going on. On one level, when you awaken to your day with all of its seeming limitations, exasperations, despair and sorrow and loss and feelings of lack. When you awaken to all of that, it is absolutely true that at that moment, your job, as best as you can in whatever way you know how, is to bring the light of consciousness into the moment exactly as it is. The job is not to stop feeling that way. The job is to bring the power of awareness. Ah, I am feeling this way. Ah, this is what that feels like. Ah, Now, there is awareness aware of the pain. There is consciousness aware of the fear. There is awareness aware of all of the physical. There is an awareness that imposes itself as first cause constantly upon each moment of your life. And as you begin to realize, the only real job you have is to stay aware of being awake, of something that is attentive. Something is attentive in this moment. Something is feeling fear. Something is feeling pain. You are not your pain. You are not the loss. You are not the fear. There is an awareness that feels the fear and knows the pain and knows whatever it is. When you understand that is the simplicity of the job, then you realize that you are going to do it well and then not do it well. And then you're going to be able to have some days and some hours of making it maximum, others that it goes out the window and you even forget you've heard any such thing. You see, the idea that somehow to be a success at living is that you have to do this job perfectly. Did you hear that? You see, if you think you have to do this job perfectly, then you are lost because you cannot do it perfectly. Because this evolution of this experiment is not at the place where you can do it perfectly until you have gotten, here we go, to 51%. When you have gotten to 51%, then the energy, the power, the matrix is so much in the forefront of your life that it begins to carry you. But until that 51%, you have to work hard. And I never did say this was easy. I said, don't come unless you are a mature human to stand on your feet that says, I'm willing to take my responsibility of the excitement of this magnificent human creativity. My part of it. And what is the part? It's so simple that the mind gets angry because the mind wants it to be complex. But it is not complex. It is so simple. You just are aware as many moments as you know how. If you do it through breath, you do it through breath. If you do it through prayer, you do it that way. If you do it through walking, meditation, you do it. You do it whatever way you do it. But the job is the same. You cannot go around saying, I am a loving human being. That's all in the mind. I'm a loving human being. Get out of my way. I'm trying to be a loving human being. How dare you bother my loving meditation in the morning just because you need help with your breakfast? Get out of here. Just realize the job is not... Yes, some of you will meditate many hours a day. Yes, if your life allows it, if that is what inner power moves you to, yes. Is that the only way? If so, then most of you in this room are lost. Because you neither have the time, nor the ability, nor the inclination. You cannot make yourself into a meditator 6 hours a day if it is not your inclination. But you can understand that the job is the same every moment for every one of you, no matter what you were doing, which is to shut up. I don't mean stop talking. To become aware, to focus in the moment, to feel the throb of life pulsating in the moment through your mind, through your sight, through your hearing, through your motion. Out of that major thrust, many things that were difficult become clear. Whatever path you choose, if you leave this part out, then you will find it takes a long time to become fully enlightened. It doesn't mean that you will not be able to see beings. It doesn't mean you will not see lights. It doesn't mean any of that. It means that that full and total explosion of enlightenment that knows that you and everything is one undulating, magnificent power of awareness, that final revelation will not be yours, because you have to work at it as many moments of the day as you can remember. And inside of the context of this, you can follow any path, you can worship any of the greats. You can be yourself, genuinely yourself, drawn to those parts of all of these magnificent paths that ring true for you. But at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, if you leave this practice of ongoing awareness out, you will not come to awakening. And it is not hard to do. I have told you before, you are doing it all the time. It is not now that you have to go home and start becoming aware. If you did, you were lost. But what you can do is to begin to become aware of awareness that is constantly present. This thing that you're seeking is so ever-present that you've missed it. It isn't that it's so small and faded away that you have to somehow go and grasp it. It is that it is so ever-present, so abundantly alive in you that you've missed it. You have misnamed it. You've called it life. You've called it awareness. You've called it whatever you've called it, living. It is the mysterious matrix upon which everything plays itself, and it is your ongoing experience of yourself. Example, many people in their older years state that it is startling to them to look in the passing windows and realize that that 60-year-old person is themselves. Totally surprised. Who's that? Because they do not experience themselves that way. Why not? Because you experience yourself the same every moment from the time you enter physical birth. You change your feelings about yourself, I certainly hope, but you do not change your experience of that central I. That I. You do not awaken in the morning and say, "Who am I?" You awaken and you say, "Ah, I am awake. Ah, I am thinking. Ah, I am breathing. Ah, I am happy. I am sad. I am depressed. I am this. I. It is that central, ongoing, magnificent, familiar, ever familiar I that is so familiar to you that you've misnamed it. And it is that that you seek, my friends. It isn't some vague, far away power that comes to teach you although those experiences are possible for those who want them. But the full and total awakening is what we are talking about today. You cannot fail because you are already doing it. You cannot flunk life because you are living it. You cannot fail because you are it. And all of your identifications with constantly changing other identities all come back to one moment of knowing. It is the same awareness that is aware of all those different faces that I move through every moment of my life. And that is what I would call the source of all life. You can call it God. You can call it the All. You can call it anything you want. But it is the same. It is who you are and what you are. You cannot earn it. You cannot be taken from it. It is what you are. And as you begin to know that that single knowing and the awakening to that knowing is the job, life becomes much simpler. And in that simplicity, extremely sweet. No matter what your experience may be on the outside, there is a sweet knowing inside. Past all mental thought and emotional pain, all's well. All's well. I'd like to thank you for coming, and I'd ask you to please stay with us for a meditation, which will be begun by some loving gratitude to a beautiful woman. So thank you. I'd like to do this as Mary Margaret, and that means all the imperfections of Mary Margaret. I will probably cry through some of it and stumble through some of it, but here we go. Most of you know Doris from the latter part of her life, but just briefly, I think the beauty of the woman that we knew lies in the beginnings of her early times. The facts: born in Omaha, Nebraska, in 1941. Well, I don't. March 11th, 1941.
No,
that can't be right, Beeb. 23. Sorry,
23.
No, doesn't matter. But March 11th. Is what I think is exciting, because it's one of the most mystical numbers there is, and it doesn't surprise me. And she married Robert in 1944, right? And then this, she was a geology major at Indiana University, and then went on again, and she was an exploration and research geologist. Now, those of you that knew her later are not surprised. I find this wonderful because all my years, although she stopped being a geologist when the children began coming, the two wonderful children, she still was an explorer and she still was a research geologist in a very different field. Those of you that knew her as an astrologer knew that her work was clear, precise, and accurate. She was a scientist in the best sense of that word. For me, one of the difficult things about the so-called New Age is we throw information around very blasély, without a lot of grounding in reality. And this was not Doris. And in the years that we've known her, she's worked on charts for us, many of us. And their accuracy and their clear and helpful information was truly wonderful. And so what is she then? Well, a spiritual scientist, perhaps. That was my experience of her. My experience of her during the work with John and Louisa Aiken's group for years and years was always consistently patient, steady, clear and humorous. Justin was commenting this morning that whenever you spoke to Doris, if you remember, she always smiled. There was always that smile right there, telling you she was listening. She was right there. She entered our life in 1977-78 down at the Aikens, and I don't think there's anyone who has been a better support to me personally and to the work that we've done than Doris. Those of you that travel to Greece and Mexico and Hawaii know that she was also tremendously humorous and playful and helpful and just a lot of fun. You know, Bartholomew says, well, there's two questions they ask you when you die. How much have you loved and how much have you learned? Well, I don't think we have to worry about Doris in any way. I'd like to read something that Beebe, her friend and husband of over 50 years, they knew each other more than 50 years, and he's here. And I want to read something because I didn't write it. He did. And you know, if after that 50 years your best friend can say this kind of thing about you, I don't think you've done so bad. Doris was a true friend. She loved people and was a great inspiration to many of us. She helped people through difficult times by helping them to better understand themselves. She will be missed. Well, there's no question about that. I also have every prayer for her greatest and fullest explosion into the light that she sought so long and so hard. And I pray that she now knows exactly who she is. She had a poem that she really loved, and Justin's going to read it because I would just sob through it, which he may too. I mean, I don't know. But anyway.
Beebe tells us that this was one of her favorite parables, a parable of immortality by Henry Van Dyke. I am standing upon the seashore. A ship at my side spreads her white sails to the morning breeze and starts for the blue ocean. She is an object of beauty and strength, and I stand and watch until at last she hangs like a speck of white cloud just where the sea and sky come down to mingle with each other. Then someone at my side says, "There she goes." Gone where? Gone from my sight. That is all. She is just as large in mast and hull and spar as she was when she left my side, and just as able to bear her load of living freight to the place of destination. Her diminished size is in me, not in her. And just at the moment when someone at my side says, "There she goes," there are other eyes watching her coming, and other voices ready to take up the glad shout, "Here she comes."
So, let's have a 5-minute meditation, please. Thank you.